Hi, welcome back to Eye to Eye, the weekly podcast talk show about passion, flow, and creativity, where we talk to fellow creatives and learn how they take their dreams and turn it into their reality. So while the topic may change, the heart behind it remains the same. I'm your host, Aaron Holman, and my guest today is...
the one and only Mama Tits.
Mama Tits, I'm happy you were able to be with us.
Hi, how are you? And you can call me Brian or Mama or whatever. Just don't call me late for the buffet or the orgy. That's the only thing I ask.
Do you think that buffets are going to exist after the times that we're in? Do you think that's going to bounce back?
They goddamn well better. To be honest, I would like to, I'm okay with the buffets coming back as long as they go the way of the old, now you're probably too young to know this, but the way of the old lunch lady behind the wall of glass,
mm-hmm.
who you would set your tray in the beginning and she would just kind of go, what do you want? And uh-huh. then slap a little wad on your plate, slide down and what do you want? Here's three fries, shut up and get out of my face. Like that is the world I think is going to happen.
I really hope that is the world that happens because we have an old town country buffet right down the road and I would hate to see it go.
You know, I actually have been to that old town country buffet. I think you're out in Tri-Cities, yeah?
Oh, I'm in Yakima, actually, yes.
Oh, Yakima. I have not been to that. Wait, have I?
I grew up there. I spent summers with my grandma.
My husband spent his summers there. I have not been to that Yakima country buffet, but my husband has.
Well, apologize to him. I'm sorry he had to spend the summers here.
Every time we would drive through there, he would always be like, I hate that sign. I hate that fucking sign.
Oh, the Palm Springs? Like,
it's not the Palm Springs.
Yeah, it's the Palm Springs of Washington. No, it is not. Other than it's a place people go to die.
I'm like, well, okay, that is what they have in common with Palm Springs. But, you know, the problem is I'm like, the Dust Bowl never hit Palm Springs. Like, downtown Yakima is a little frightening at times and it's very much Idaho-ish.
Yeah,
it's very much like it was in Idaho. So it's these country towns, farming people, rough around the edges. I'm sure there's wonderful, wonderful people there as well. But it's a lot of, it can be rough around the edges. And yeah, and I was always like, wow, I can't believe Palm Springs didn't sue them.
The slander, the libel, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Mama Tits, welcome to the podcast. For the listeners out there, Mama Tits is a legendary activist, a singer who does it all in drag, and is also known as the skyscraper hostess. But just to start things off, can you please tell us your preferred pronouns and then describe yourself in your own words?
Well, my preferred pronouns are, like I said before, anything you choose to call me. You can call me he, her, they, them. I'm generation, I'm Gen X, so mm-hmm. I'm not so worried about what you call me as long as you're not trying to stab me or whatnot. Because I grew up, when I was growing up, it really was you had to fight for your rights. You had to fight and people would attack you regularly. Whereas now we get to have the beauty of what are your preferred pronouns? How should we address you? And that sort of a thing. But for me, like, I respect it for other people, but for me, I don't give a shit. Like I said, just don't call me whatever you want. Just don't call me late to the buffet or the orgy.
Yep, absolutely. I will make sure not to.
Yeah.
The next one that I have planned.
Perfect. Way after the vaccine.
Oh, my good Lord. Absolutely. Way, way. This is a show about passion.
Correct.
Which of that I know you have a lot of. One of the ones that I found out about is that you became an opera singer very early on. And I know that singing still carries through to what you do today. Can you mm-hmm. talk about where singing started for you?
Well, when I was a little kid, I always wanted to sing. My mother was one of those, you know, she was a single mom in the 80s. And so it was very Barbara Streisand and Houston and Sade and, you know, the Pointer Sisters and that sort of a thing. And so like we would listen to that type of music, especially on Saturday morning when we would be cleaning. And my mother loves to sing. She's not the best singer, but she always passionately sang and she didn't care. And I was not the greatest singer when I was a kid. I wanted to be a musician, but I wasn't one of those prodigies. I wasn't one where you were like, oh, this child needs to be in a music conservancy and all that stuff. It never was. But my mom noticed that I really liked it. And she also noticed that I really liked theater. And so she was like, well, let's do it. And so she introduced me to the San Jose Children's Musical Theater when I was a kid. My first show was Cinderella. I was the coachman in Cinderella. I felt all fabulous. You know, it was the first show that my family went to.
How old were you the first time that you were involved in that?
God, I think I was probably anywhere between like 8 and 10.
Mm-hmm. So really then you did like grow up in it, in that theatrical community.
Yeah, I mean, at least when we could. So I grew up pretty poor. We were able to do stuff where it was either no cost, community theater, or school projects. And then later in life, we kind of moved away from that just because of the way life handed us certain things and we were dealing with other things in life. But then as I got into junior high, I got into choir. And it was something that I was really good at. And I loved music. I loved the camaraderie. I loved all of it. And it gave me passion. And to the point where when I was a young teenager, when I would go to sanctuaries at churches and vocalize. I would go ask the old ladies who were working during the day. And I'd be like, may I go vocalize in the sanctuary? Just because I loved the acoustics. I loved that fervent sound of bouncing off the walls and the reverb, and it was everything.
It was magical. Yeah.
Yeah. And it really was. It was something where it's like other kids would go to the soda shop or go to the park and go hang out with their friends or go play Nintendo. But I'd be walking around to the old stone cathedrals and be vocalizing in the sanctuary with nobody else.
Were you making up music, or was there music that you really enjoyed to cover during that time?
Both. I would make up hymnals, kind of a thing, kind of like Leonard Cohen's Hallelujah, you know, where it was just kind of, you'd repeat the word, but you'd kind of vocalize it and you'd just kind of have fun. And I would play with some of the music that I'd learned when I was a kid, because my mother never went to church. We were not a church going family, but my father did do some church when I was growing up. And whenever I would go visit my father, on the week of the year that I would go visit him, his wife would make us go to church, and then we'd go learn these hymnals like Sound the Alarm and on Zion and stuff, like all these old crazy, weird, you know, hymnals. But they were songs that I knew, and they were songs that were also respectful of a church. So I was able to kind of get away with doing that. And the little old ladies were like, oh, isn't he just so sweet? He's going to be a little minister, choir director one day. And, you know, and just, let alone, you know, giant drag queen homosexual, but
you're still preaching in a way.
I have always been a preacher. My mother said it might, you know, when I was growing up, I was either going to be a lawyer or a preacher. Like, that's because I talk a lot and talk with passion. I can make you believe my side if I really need to. But then, you know, getting into choir really kind of gave me regimented music training. I had teachers who were not afraid to tell me how bad I was, but also didn't do it in a way where it destroyed me.
It was constructive, it wasn't destructive.
Correct. Like, I had a piano teacher back in the day that told me I should burn my piano and never touch another piano again. And because of that, it scared me from ever learning the piano. So now I own a piano. It's sitting right over there. I don't know how to play it.
Yeah.
I have friends who play it. When we do shows, I have pianists that come in and use it, but it's like a speaker. You know, where, and now I'm 41, almost 42 years old, where I'm just like, I'm almost ashamed to even try to learn it. But, you know, one day I will. The teachers were so good at really cutting through the bullshit of the delusions I had to break it down to a constructive point of, okay, let's take this down and let's strip it down and let's build it up. And I found that I loved it. I loved music. I loved learning it. I loved training my voice. And then I got into high school, choir again, did All Northwest competitions, did solo competitions, even sang at Disneyland for the Magic Music Days. And then I had an opportunity to sing with the Opera Idaho Company.
Wow.
And I was asked to come and sing for them. And I sang, and I was hired as the youngest member of the adult opera chorus in the company's history. So I was 16 years old, and I was a part of the adult opera choir. So my first opera was Tosca at the Morrison Center in Boise, Idaho, with Tim Lindbergh of the New York Philharmonic as my first conductor. And my first director was Christopher Modigliano from Juilliard in New York. They came in to do that show. And so, and I'm dealing with them, and they both took me under their wing because they were really impressed with a young teenager who wasn't perfect, wasn't a genius, but was passionate and loved the music, and they wanted to encourage that.
Wow.
Unfortunately, I wasn't able to go to New York and do Juilliard and do all those other things because, one, I wasn't good enough. Two, I didn't have any money. We were poor white trash. But it kept me going. And so I did a bunch of different shows with Opera Idaho Company, and I loved it. I was getting opera training without having to go to these weird, crazy conservancies because I'd have these opera singers who were taking me under their wing and teaching me the breath support and teaching me, you know, and so I was learning this operatic style on top of this choral singing that I'd been learning, and it just more and more passion.
Wow.
Then tragedy struck our family, and I ran away from my music because it destroyed me. My entire life was upheaved. I became the only living child out of five. And my older brother committed suicide, and my three other siblings died either shortly after birth or were stillborn. And going through that with my family, just one right after the other, really gutted me. And mentally, it actually caused me to kind of snap as a young teenager. And I got I acted out. My brother ended up dying because of his drug addictions. And then so because of that and how much I looked up to him, I dove into drugs. And I wanted to know what that magic was that took him away. On one side, my father is sending me into therapy, trying to get me fixed. And they're pumping me full of drugs. And then
rarely is that the solution, especially in a long-term sense, you know.
Well, this was back in the early 90s when we didn't know that lithium Depakote Prozac would cause you to kill yourself.
Yeah.
And I was put on Lamictal, lithium, Depakote, Prozac, sometimes combinations of all three or four. And it destroyed all of my creativity, all of my art, all of my music, all of everything. I was not happy. I wasn't sad. I was just there. It was like I was permanently e-tarded.
Yeah.
I had no serotonin to give you. Mm-hmm. So then I refused to do those drugs because I could feel them destroying my soul. So then I transitioned and started self-medicating with acid and ecstasy and GHB and DXM and you know, and PCP and angel dust and da 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 and raving and doing all the things and da 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 da. At, you know, 16, 17, 18 years old, I'm doing more drugs than some adults have ever done in their entire existence. Mm-hmm. And I'm running 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 until it just all collapsed. Everything collapsed. I almost lost everything. And I finally was like, I think I'm done.
Mm-hmm.
I'm done with that.
Yeah.
I'm done running. I'm done running. I'm done feeling out of control. I'm done with all of that. But where do I go from here? Mm-hmm. So then it was a long road of
Where were you when that moment happened? When that rock bottom, that this realization of...
When I was living in New York City and I was homeless. In 1997, 98, I was homeless in New York City, sleeping in the back of a restaurant that I worked at. Didn't know where I would eat, even tried being a sex worker, and it was unsustainable. And I'm luckily privileged enough that I have a father who is very financially set, And should I get into a situation where I needed to, I was able to call him and he was able to help. Of course, as a young kid going through all of this stuff, I took advantage of that because it allowed me to be crazy and wild, but then always have this safety net that I could just do whatever, but it would always fix. So he kind of yanked me back onto the West Coast and I went back to Idaho at the time. My father lived in Oregon, my mother and my stepdad lived in Idaho. And in 98, I moved back to Idaho and I knew I couldn't do it there. I couldn't, because as soon as I went back, I started connecting with all my old friends and all the old drug contacts and the old party people and everything. And there it went again.
Yeah.
And so I made a decision at that point. I was like, look, I can't do this. So I need to go, but I'm not running. I'm just going to change my location and I'm going to start again. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go where I don't know anybody. Mm-hmm. And me and a couple friends who were all looking to change our lives went to Seattle. And, lived in a house with 17 of my closest friends. And we called it 717 Denny Way, and that was its address. It's no longer there. It's a new condo tower now. But this house was an old house. It was we had three bedrooms upstairs and a basement. Mm-hmm. And a living room, dining room area and everything. And we had people all over the house.
A real communal living setup then.
Yeah, it was a bunch of fucking party kids and squatters and shit, and we paid $1,000 a month for rent, and even then it was a struggle to get that done. But that was in 2000 when I came to Seattle, and but I was around a bunch of different creative people. Yes, there were drugs still happening, but it wasn't our life. It was just a recreation that happened. So it was like, oh, okay, no big deal. And I got kind of introduced to getting stoned, which then I had never done before.
Yeah. Interesting. Out of all the other drugs, this isn't the one that you like.
I hadn't really done smoking weed. I thought of everybody just was weird. I was like, ugh. I'd rather do ecstasy. I'd rather do a 10 strip of acid. I'd rather do mushrooms. I'd rather do, you know, I'd rather candy flip. I'd rather do the ketamine that my buddy made, you know, or the the DXM that they pilled up that week, you know, because mm-hmm. I had chemist friends and, you know, and so, and hell, my husband back then was a meth head, but, you know, and I did all of that shit. I mean, I used to tell people the list of what I haven't done is easier for me to remember of what I have done. I mean, I even did pilled up heroin one time when I was at a party and didn't even realize it. I bought ecstasy and it was heroin. And I spent the entire party literally keeled over in a porta potty or trying to get into a porta potty so that we could throw up. But while vomiting, it was the most amazing trip ever of our lives. But it was because the only time the roll would happen was when that was happening, but it was intense and phenomenal, but it was like, this is disgusting. And that was kind of the moment where I was like, and then the lights came on at that party. We were in Salt Lake City for that party and there was a dead kid.
Oh my God, what happens then? I've always wondered what happens when that happens.
He was 16. He had taken three pills of ecstasy, but they were heroin, and he OD'd.
Oh, good Lord.
And that woke all of us up. We had been partying and doing all this crazy stuff, but we had never seen anybody go over. You know, I'm down, and that woke me up in the Idaho days, which is what drove me over to Washington. Then I'm doing more calm stuff. And then they were like, no, girl, we don't need to be doing ecstasy every night. You don't need to be doing acid every night. Just smoke this. Chill the fuck out.
Mm.
And I was like, oh, this is great. Because it took the stress away. It would dial down my anxieties. And it allowed me to be relaxed and creative and happy. Mm-hmm. So I really transitioned to being a pothead. I was just like, I'm just do this. And it really helped. And it became my medication. It helped me get out of depressions. It helped me get out of other things. I would be focused, like laser focused on things. And it's completely the opposite of what people think dopers do. But like, you know, us potheads, especially career potheads, mm-hmm. we are high functioning. And even then I was just like, oh, this is cool.
Yeah.
I can relax. I can use it for what I need to, but I also can still function. Great. So then I was able to start kind of clearing my head. Long story long, I fast forward to 2001, and I was crossing the street at Seattle Pride when it was still on Capitol Hill, and I caught the eye of DJ, my husband. Mm-hmm. And he said to his friend that night, I had just finished a threesome the night before.
Congrats.
I was hoeing it up for the week. She's a hoe.
It's a bucket list item.
It was wonderful. And he told his friend how cute I was. And she said to him, say something. And he said, oh God, no, I can't. I'm too embarrassed. And she goes, well, fuck you, I will. And so she hollered at me. And I could hear this whole thing as we're walking across the street. I could hear it. And I'm continuing. And she turns around and she whips me. She says, hey, you. I whipped around with a shit-eating grin on my face. I'm like, what do you want? I knew what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes, where are you going? I was like, I'm going to the park. It's Pride. Well, it's been raining and it's a mud bog. Why don't you come with us and go get coffee? And he looked mortified.
Couldn't believe it was happening.
So, of course, I said, yeah, sure. Why not? We walked right by the Starbucks and went to the Grill on Broadway, or the Broadway Grill at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And made out, had cocktails, moved in together 2 weeks later. 2 years went by without a night apart, and now we're celebrating our 20th year. And wow. Because of him, he encouraged me with everything that started to come up. Because once I found him, there was that really amazing feeling that happened when I found my partner, like the person that I
can work with.
Really, yeah, it just really connected. It was like somebody that, like, I didn't know I was looking my whole life for him, but I was. And we connected in a way, and we became best friends and lovers and passionate. And because of that, it sparked my creativity again. It sparked my wantingness to do stuff again. And we were out at the Cuff on Capitol Hill, and the sisters were doing a Wackanon project, which was a fundraiser, but they were doing S&M. It was an S&M party. Where you'd mm-hmm. pay money to the charity and you'd whack a nun. Or they would whack you. We had the St. Andrew's Cross. We had rulers. We had whips. We had...
Oh, it sounds like a wonderful time.
It was delectable. Until it became dangerously lawsuit land. It was a wonderful thing for a while, but then it the times, they changed and we weren't able to do it. Like, we had transitioned to where we didn't hit the people, they would only hit us, and then one bad apple who wouldn't follow the rules hurt one of the nuns, and then the event ended. But in its time, it was a wonderful thing. But I was sitting there, I was talking to Sister Lotus Bowl, and it just sparked it. I felt the fireworks going off in me, just like I had felt when I saw the Club Kids on Phil Donahue and Sally Jesse Raphael back when I was a little kid going to, you know, high school. Mm-hmm. And I come home after school and I see the Club Kids. I was like, oh my God, what is that? I learned out what a drag queen was. I want to be one of them. But then all this other stuff happened and I ran away from all of that. And I was trying this other life. But then through the love and support of my now husband, and then being around the sisters, it sparked a fire in me. And I asked him, I said, can I join this group? And he goes, I don't give a shit. Joined the sisters, and they ended up cultivating the star that's in me now.
Mm-hmm.
They gave me purpose. They gave me a calling. They gave me passion, because it wasn't self-serving. I was doing something for a community that had, throughout my life had been there to support me and, had helped me when I needed. So this amazing organization that was giving back to the community just gave me a reason to do something. Then it wasn't, I'm just doing drag to do drag. I'm part of a bigger organization. I'm part of a big group. I'm part of a group that's helping the community. And then I found out that they were founded the same week I was born in 1979. And it's literally all this serendipitous, coincidental things. And it just really drove my passion. Then I tested positive with the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, and they helped redirect my fear into activism and education. They never let me feel alone. Not only was the sisters there, but like the moment that we even thought that I was positive, my husband was there, never wavered anything, just was like, let's go deal with this, you know. And then to have this organization of the sisters with me, on top of having a loving husband who was serial discordant, so meaning he's negative and I'm positive, for any listeners that don't understand that terminology. But he never judged me. He never left me. He never condemned me. He just was very compassionate and kind. And then to have this family of, you know, at the time, 1,500 members worldwide of educators and activists that their main cause is HIV/AIDS activism. I was getting all the knowledge I needed. I had the support system I needed. So then it created this beast that just wanted to get out there and give back and make money for charitable organizations and fight for queer rights and visibility. And then I found my voice. Then I found, you know, and it was just all these things that just, I had to break myself all the way down and then build myself back up layer by layer by layer. Then after quite a few years of being a sister, I had kind of gone into hosting and being a part of events and throwing events with them. And it just became more and more of, this is what I want to do. This is what I'm supposed to do. And I knew it when I was 4 or 5 years old. I used to do shows for my stuffed animals. And I knew I was going to be an entertainer when I was a kid, but I never knew how to get there. Yeah. Then in my 20s, I figured it out. I figured a way to make it happen. And then going into my 30s, figuring it out even more, working by day and doing drag, you know, doing nun work at night and, you know, juggling that. And then it getting heavier and heavier in the entertainer side. And then leaving corporate America and starting my own business to kind of do it on my own so that I don't have to worry about other people. So I had flexibility. And then we built that foundation. So we had our own housekeeping company so we could do that. Then it became more logical that I moved to doing performing full time. But as a nun, you don't make money. So I had to transition from being a sister to being a drag queen with a sister soul. So hence Mama Tits was born in 2010. Because prior I was Sister Stella Standing, meaning I'm still here to fight the fight and hold your hand should you need it. But Mama Tits came along and she was my drag persona. I was able to come up with something with the heart of a nun. So I still had the knowledge and the activism and I could excite an audience for into a passion project or whatever I needed them to. But I did this in this whole thing and then it just kept snowballing.
So the name Mama Tits, what I like about it is it would be sort of like if you're saying you had to transition into being a drag queen with the sisters, like heart still. It reminds me of Mother Superior then, you know, but it's just, well, a much more informal way. Now, why the tits?
So the original name was Busty McGee.
Busty
McGee. And but the problem with that is that nickname became, I didn't realize how popular that nickname was with big titty girls who go to New Orleans.
That's hilarious. So
all the bachelorettes that would come to the place where I was working and everything, and I'd be like, hi, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Busty McGee, but you can call me Tits. Then afterwards, everybody would be like, oh my God, my nickname's Busty McGee too. Oh my God, my girl. And I was so disgusted by all of that. I was just like,
it's too basic.
I was like, oh, child, no.
With all these women?
I'm not a Becky. God damn it, I am not a Becky. And at the time, I was working with Robbie Turner, and later to be working with Jinx Monsoon prior to Drag Race. And prior to Robbie Turner's unfortunate Uber accident.
Oh, may the driver rest in peace.
At his house.
I know.
In the fictional world, because he doesn't exist. Anyway, Robbie Smollett. And I feel bad about throwing shade like that because my friend was hurting.
Yeah.
But I will say this to your listeners. When you're really good friends with someone and they're at your home all the time, and you find out years after that everything was a lie, it crushes you.
Yeah.
I really wish nothing but the best for Jeremy. I really do. I will say this and I mean it. I wish he gets the help he needs. And I hope that whatever he's doing, he is healthy, he is happy, and he is following his passion. But even after the incident, I would text him. I texted him when it broke and he kept the lie going.
You can't, and, you can't when it's in your face, the truth.
And I was like, and even Jinx Monsoon and I have talked about this ad nauseum. And we both were just like, sorry, sis, you gotta go. I can't with you. So I wanted to change my name and I went to Robbie and I was like, girl, I gotta change my damn name. This shit, these Beckys are working my nerves. Now, no offense to any Becky out there. Lovely name, excellent character on Roseanne. You know, excellent, sure, fabulous. Even the new Becky, the old Becky, don't care. It's fabulous. And most Beckys are the ones with the good hair. But
they are.
What I mean, and it's just like whenever I have somebody who's named Karen, they're like, why do you use the name Karen? I was like, it's not you, it's them. And I just couldn't. I couldn't be connected with these Beckys. So I looked at Robbie and I was like, what am I going to do? I'm talking with Jackson Brown and Isaac Scott and everybody backstage. And I was like, what am I going to do? And she goes, well, you already call yourself Tits. So let's keep that. She's like, but you're also like everybody's mom. Like you're always making sure everybody have eaten, have gotten water, they're taken care of, being the hostess of this show, you're always making sure we're okay, you're giving us extra time if we need it, you're kind of like the mom. Cool mom, but you're the mom. So why don't you go by Mama, and your tits are as big as Texas, and you already get set, tell everybody they can call you Tits, why don't you just call yourself Mama Tits? Wow. And I was like, huh. Fast forward to the next show, and I went out there, and before I'd be like, good evening, everyone, my name is Busty McGee, but you can call me Tits. And they're like, yay, we're so excited. Good evening, everybody, my name is Mama Tits. They lost it.
It cuts right to the chase is why.
Yeah, it is, you know, it's just like when I was talking, when I was, and watch your toes, I'm gonna drop a name. I was working on building my show Triple D a couple years ago, and I was talking with Ross Matthews about the Triple D name, and I was like, it was like Dick, Drugs, and Divas. And he goes, no, Dick is the funny part. Flip it. Divas, Drugs, and Dick. He goes, cut through the chase, hit him over the fucking face with the dick. And I was like, really? And he goes, You can either take my word or do what you want, but that's my advice. And I did it, and it
was the right choice. Right. Yeah.
And you know, I have kind of shot myself in the foot with the name Mama Tits because I can't be on like a morning talk show. Mm-hmm. If I ever did, which I can't be on a morning talk show with my full name.
Yeah. It could be like Mama T.
I've been Mama T. When she Mama T, she ready to spill it.
I love it.
And, you know, so it's interesting. It's like Bunny and I chatted about this a while ago because I asked her if she had ever wanted to change her name or if she had always been happy with it. And she actually said there was a long time when she really hated her name. Mm. But it became so powerful that you can't change it. And now I can't change my name.
Absolutely not.
I would start completely over. Mm-hmm. I can change my look, my appearance, my style. But the one thing that cannot change is Mama Tits. Like mama has to be a part of mama, period, has to be a part of it. Mm-hmm. So it's been for a while I didn't like it, and now I've kind of fallen in love with it again. And to be honest, she's given me the life that I goddamn it deserve.
So I love owe her that. A lot. Well, talk about some of these, because the list of your credits are extraordinary. I mean, you've headlined, I don't even know how many prides. I'm just curious, what are some of your most proud moments? One of my favorites is your Mimosa's Cabaret time, that you were there. What are some moments that really stood out for you and why in your career?
Seattle Pride 2014.
Mm-hmm. I know the one.
The day that defined me as... It defined me, period. The day that defined who I was. I remember that day was the most wild day.
Well, it's like you showed everyone who you were, you know? It was beautiful.
It was really weird. I didn't even think of it that way. Mm-hmm. It happened. And what's really weird is that day, so my husband and I had two dachshunds for a long time, Bruno and Disco. And the problem is that when I would work prides, it would be 12 to 16 to 20 hour days.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm up really early in the morning. I'm not able to go out the night before. Everybody would be like, don't you want to do something on Saturday? I'm like, fuck you. I got to host a parade. I'm up at 5:30 in the morning. You can suck a dick. Mm-hmm. Like, uh-uh.
Yeah.
Uh-uh. I'm going to bed. I'm getting real stoned at 2 p.m. the day before, and I'm passing out by 4. So I'm waking up and I'm like, I'm good. But I, my husband would stay home for the first part. And he was like, I don't give a shit about a parade. I've been to them over and over and over. And I understand that. I mean, there's a lot of us who've been doing these, especially those of us who've been, like, I've been hosting the parade for, at this point, 5-6 years.
That's a lot.
Yeah. And the one time he stayed home, he had been with me at every pride, right next to me the whole time, making sure I'm drinking water, mm-hmm. everything. This one pride, it was such a long day. And I told him, I said, don't worry about it. I've got a team down there. I'll be okay. I've got my assistant with me. And he was a physical therapist. So he could actually like reset the metatarsal bones in my feet.
Oh, so good. God.
Oh, it was painful. But if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't have been able to walk. Because I had to start, I'd have to do the parade. I had to be at the parade thing by 7:30 in the morning, 8 a.m. The parade doesn't kick off till 11. It's not over until 3.
I can't even imagine.
From there, and I went to the main stage.
The longest I can like stand in heels is like 6 hours. Like at the longest. And then my legs are giving out.
Hosting the main stage, going up and down ramps and stairs, performing. Then I'm going over to the DJ stage, going up and down and performing and giving a speech and motivating people and da 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 da. Then I have to leave, get into a car, go up to the cuff, and I need to be up there by 5 o'clock, mm-hmm. 6 o'clock, and start hosting that until 10 at night. And then we had to like decompress.
Yeah, because you can't just like go home, de-drag, and go to sleep. Like there's no such thing.
Although that night I kind of did. Yeah, we drank afterwards. I thought I was going to, but then what, that weird 40-second wind came in, like, because I knew I didn't have anything to do.
Yeah.
So then I could finally, like.
Like, I did it!
Yeah, it was like, yeah! And then blink, and it was over. But, and I had to have my feet reset, like, 6 times that day. It was bad.
So that defining moment of the day, what was it that happened? I'm super familiar with it, but please recount it for our listeners.
For those who don't know, I was there at the Seattle Pride down at Westlake, center of downtown Seattle, the kickoff point, the main stage for the Pride parade, where all the floats going by who are doing the competitions, they're all there. I'm the main stage announcer. I'm hosting. I'm doing my thing. My co-host is Sylvia Ostafermore. And her and I are doing this. It was actually Sylvia who got me into the parades. She asked me to be a co-host, and that's how I got into it. And then we moved to the main stage after years of being down in Belltown. We were sitting there. George Takei had just kind of come through in his convertible to kind of mingle with the audience beforehand as a grand marshal. Mm-hmm. And we were chatting with George and talking about how things were gonna go in the beginning and when he comes by, how we were gonna announce him and everything like that. And we were then letting George kind of get mobbed by some people. We were stepping back and I looked down the parade route, which is the direction in which the parade is going. And mm-hmm. around the corner comes this group of sign-wielding anti-gay protesters going the opposite direction of the parade, but on the parade route. Now, I didn't know this, but there was a new person who had run the permitting that year, a new volunteer, and they didn't know to get the permit for the entire morning. So this anti-gay group actually had a permit to do a parade on our parade route as a free speech march provided by the city because somebody screwed up and gave them an in.
Oh, my God.
So they were legally protected by police to be there.
Yeah, I saw the cops around them, and I was very confused about that aspect of it. I was like,
nobody knew that morning, but they were permitted.
Oh, that's infuriating.
But they couldn't. There was somebody new at the... Somebody new was gathering the permits, and somebody new was providing them. So there were two new people who had never done it before and didn't realize that they needed it for the whole day, because every year they've always gotten the permit from 5:30 in the morning until 4:30 in the afternoon, or until 4 in the afternoon. And so, and it's always to block off Third Avenue. But that window gave them, and they're always chomping at the bit to try to get in there. Well, they got in. And they're doing this, and I looked at all the girls, and Sylvia had suggested that we wear this specific outfit, turquoise sequin fabric that was made in her style and my style. And then in the, if you were a child of the 80s, you remember these, there were plush hangings in your room as a child. Some people had a moon, some people had stars, some people had a rainbow with a cloud, and everything like that.
One.
Sylvia had found one. And Sylvia is a vintage queen, total 1960s vintage fabulousness. And she was like, this would be really cute. Why don't we cut this in half, attach it to each of our chests, and then we can kind of be the bookends. And anybody we take pictures with, we're the rainbow that's kind of going surrounding them. And it was just this brilliant idea. And I was like, no, I hate this idea. I don't like what's happening. I feel it's really cheesy. And then she had the maze. She was like, I don't care. We're doing it. I was like, God damn it.
Yes.
And then I saw them that morning and I was like, you're right. You are right. You are 1,000% right. I was wrong. These are fucking amazing. And you were even, he had even gone and like glitter encrusted them.
Oh my gosh, how glamorous.
Oh, yeah. Oh girl. And he had made them so they could strap onto you and they were rigid and it was awesome. He's the same guy that made, Daniel Hellman is a designer in Seattle. He's the same guy who made Ben de la Creme's like fly costume.
Oh, one of the best constructed pieces.
Yeah, so that's Daniel Hellman. And I had blue hair. I had a rainbow on my chest, and I was wearing sequins. Bitch, I look like a gay goddamn Care Bear. So I think in my head, Care Bear stare when I see these guys. Because we were just joking about how we look like Care Bears, especially because I had blue hair that day.
Yeah.
And I looked at Donatella Howe and Sylvia O. Staffermore, who were standing there, and I said, oh my God, girls, Care Bear stare. And they looked at me like I was insane.
Yep.
And Care I Bear ran out stare. Into the road, and the rest is history. It was caught on video, and you can look it up. Mama Tits is a Crusader on YouTube. But it was the first time they'd ever seen a drag queen take on anti-gay protesters without looking at them. And I used Bible verses against them, which nobody had ever seen before. And it went around the world. It's been viewed about 2 million times on YouTube, which for 6 years ago, that's pretty good. And for a 4.5, almost 5 minute video to have over, almost 2 million views. And it was like that. Mm-hmm. I was picked up by every publication. I think it was picked up by 150 different international publications. The story was picked up. Seattle Gay Scene broke the story, and I gave him an exclusive interview, and then that interview went around to all the different places, and it went crazy all the way to Russian national television.
Oh my God.
Clip of me
was
on Russian national TV because it was the same time Putin was doing the anti-gay propaganda law, and I was called the white devil because I was shoving my gayness down the throats of all, look at all the kids on the street and look at what this freak is doing. But what it did was they used it. So technically, I'm technically banned from travel in Russia by Vladimir Putin. But what it did was it told all the queer people in Russia, because this was on Russian national TV, the propaganda news.
Yeah.
They saw a drag queen in Seattle, Washington. And then I'm getting messages from people through other people through this like underground railroad message thing, because in Russia, they're blocked from certain things.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
I'm getting all the messages sent via people. And they're like, if you can get to Mama Tits, you're in Seattle, go to her show, get it, tell her thank you. And it just was this crazy, crazy thing. And that week I realized, I was like, oh, this is what I'm supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
I'm supposed to use my voice. And that was literally all it was. It was that moment was the most pivotal moment of my life.
Mm. I understand why you now say it would be such a defining moment, because it informed you. I've heard you say it before. You said you're a drag queen who makes people think and feel. Like, mm-hmm. That's the goal of what you do. And it's the reason I'm drawn to you. My favorite moments when you're on stage is when you're just talking. It is so motivational, also funny.
I try. I'm really good. I am really good at my monologues.
You are.
When people come to my show, just especially when we would have a political situation or something was going on, people would flock to Mimosas and be like, "What's she gonna talk about today, bitch? She gonna go up?" Because I love going on rants. I love it. It's cathartic for me. But it's inspiring to others. So I haven't gone on an epic one, but I'm about to, there's one a brewing. I saw the goddamn debates.
You sat and watched that? That was a hard one to stomach.
Every single one of your listeners right now.
Yes.
If this airs before any, if there's still debate after this airs, I don't want to hear anybody say they can't watch it.
I know, you have
to. It's going to be the hardest thing in the world for us to do, but watch it for the over 200,000 people who are dead because of that asshole and his mismanagement. And if Joe Biden can stand up there, Uncle Joe is not my choice, but I'm behind him 100% right now.
Yeah.
But if Uncle Joe can stand up there with a speech impediment, with his stutter, and have it possibly triggered, which it was the other night, you could see it, and take those personal attacks on his deceased hero of a son, and his other son, who is, people have attempted to defame over and over and over, who is a recovering addict. If he can stand there and hold his head high and still work to drive that home, the least we can do is be there to bear witness. We must watch. The part of the reason why he's going so crazy is he wants to exhaust us, so we just give up and tune it out, and then that's when they do everything.
That's the tea, Mama T.
But that's the thing, is like, I know it's difficult. I was talking to my mother and I were talking about hurling things across the room at the TV, because it was just so maddening. But I've been out of work for 6 months and we can't afford a new TV. So this is when we are going to be defined. It's not when things are going really well. It's not when we have, yes, Obama defined us as a progressive, as a possibly progressive nation, but we regressed. And I even called it when Obama got in. I was like, we're going to swing back the other way and we better hold on tight, because it's going to get ugly before it gets better. And now is the time. If you miss Obama and you miss being proud of the United States of America, then it's time to put in the work. It's time to get out there, make sure everybody, I mean, in some states you can literally register to vote all the way up until the day of the election. So find out when you can register to vote in your area, get everybody you know to vote, and get that vote out and get it done. Because don't act like your life is at stake or your country is at stake. This shit is at stake. I mean, this justice that they're putting up, her religious sect, I don't give a fuck what you believe. I do not care, unless your religion is so fanatical that it supersedes everything else in your life. Meaning, if you are in a devout, a Hasidic Jewish community is extremely devout and they cannot waver from their belief systems. It is super, super strict. Devout Roman Catholic or Russian Orthodox or whatnot, they're so devout. And you can be Russian Orthodox and still be a justice. You can be Catholic and still be a justice. You can be Jewish and still be a justice. But when you go over and it gets into that fundamentalist area, and I don't want anybody to misunderstand what I'm saying. I'm not saying that Hasidic Judaism is extremist or any of those things. It is much more devout than your run-of-the-mill Jewish faith. But then you go beyond that. Even that is questionable when you are that devout. To me, to be a justice in the legal system, it's one of those things where unless you can completely separate. Mm-hmm. And then when you go even further to that radicalized or fundamentalist, I mean,
it's dangerous at that point.
She believes men are the boss, women are subservient, and the men are called what I think they're called the leaders, and the women are called handmaids.
No, they're not.
100% fact.
My balls just like went inside my body. Like that is terrifying.
They don't publicly call themselves that, but officially in the religion, they are still labeled as such. They don't. Once the show came out, they really pulled back, but it's real. This is the shit that people don't notice is happening. This is why the young generations do what you want to do on TikTok, but bitch, turn it off every once in a while. Go over to Twitter. Go to the Associated Press. Go to Al Jazeera and sit down and see what's happening in the world. You know, I don't have a CNN app. I don't have a Fox News app. I don't have any of those, but I do have Associated Press because that is going to be pretty blank. Here it is.
Information presented and not a point of view.
I'm teaching my parents. My parents watch CNN all the time. My mom watches CNN all the time. I'm like, I just want you to know, if you're going to be sitting there watching CNN, it is just the rights. It is the left's version of Fox. So don't think that it's not extremist on its own. Mm-hmm. Go out there and aggregate your information from multiple places. When you need to have your ego stroked and your feelings validated and you need to not feel like you're going to go jump off a cliff, go watch your CNN and have them stroke you and make you feel better so you don't feel insane.
Put that safety blanket on for a little bit.
Put it on for a minute, but recognize that it's a safety blanket to make you, it's to stroke your coat. Then go out there and search for the real information. Watch BBC One and see what they're saying. What Al Jazeera is one of the most centrist, like just facts. That's it. Don't care how it is. Go to NPR. They're not going to sway. Go to the Associated Press and check out that stuff and do the stuff. Even when it scares you, don't be a headline skimmer. Be educated on what is happening. And I know it sucks and I know nobody wants to deal with it, but that's why we are in the situation we're in right now, fighting for our rights.
There's homework there for you listeners. We're going to move into our final section of things, a section called Passions Lately.
Oh.
Very simply, what has made you passionate lately, Mama Tits, besides the things that we've mentioned?
Sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
Not dick?
No.
Too tired. Too hot.
Shut up. No. It's my husband's in the back. He's like, he's a top. To be honest, that is a weird question for me right now. And I don't want it to sound, I don't want it to be fire and brimstone for everybody, but I'm fighting to find my passion, actually. Mm. I am struggling. Mm-hmm. I'm coming out of my depression. Mm-hmm. I'm in the process of creating a new show, but I'm still struggling to do it. I have so much anxieties right now. over the election that it's really clouding me. On top of that, I have major anxieties over this virus because I am not excited about wave two.
Yeah. Which is in some countries here. Yeah.
It's already, they're slowing down. They're closing up things in England. They're closing up things in Europe.
I know Canada is pulling back a lot this week.
Yeah. And I know the US is going to in November and December. And, you know, it's going to be one of those things where it's like, because we're on the tail end because we would not let go of that first wave. So we just kept it going. That wave is just going. Yeah. So we haven't even gotten a chance for it to just breathe. And it's like, I mean, my passion right now is finding happiness when I can, to be honest, really. It's that is the only thing that I can find passion in right now. It's not even my music. My music, I'm having to force myself. And this is just me being honest.
Thank you for being honest.
You know, people are like, well, just, you know, you can't just live in the da 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 da. I was like, my job is to make you happy. How can I make you happy if I'm not happy? Mm-hmm. How can I be funny if I have zero desire to laugh right now?
Yeah.
It's not funny. Mm-hmm. This shit is not funny. But one thing I have been really thankful for is I have a small group of friends here in Puerto Vallarta that that are former U.S. Residents. And it's also made up of Vallartense or Patas Heladas, as we call it, which is a local Vallarta person. So I have Mexicano friends and Americano friends, and all of our Canadian friends are gone. And we've been doing small group event things where it's like, we have a small pod where it's my backup singer, Diego, and then Effie Pissarro from American Idol. We've been doing some web shows and stuff. And so thus three, my husband, and then a good friend, Daniel, and his husband, Bill, six have been a pod.
Yeah.
And then we have an extended pod, which is another couples. And we all, and they're another pod, they're a pod of like 4 to 6, and we're a pod of 6. And we don't always get together in the total group, but it's usually upwards of 9 to 10 if we do get the whole group together, but we're only outdoor restaurants. You know, completely socially distanced. We're not talking, we're not touching each other. With our small pods, we may have people over, but what we do is we end up like, we go in the car, we wear a mask while we're all in the car because we live in separate homes, but then we go hike up a river.
Yeah.
You know, take your mask off and live like a normal human being in the middle of a jungle. And to be honest, because I can go to the jungle and I can go swim with jellyfish and get stung, and I can take a boat to Yalapa and walk to a waterfall, or I can go up Palomaria, Rio Palomaria, and I can go to that waterfall, or I can just sit in a river pool for hours, or I can go float at a beach club that nobody's at because it's so socially distanced. I'm really learning to just embrace those moments of peace and tranquility and appreciate the magic that it's around you, because we don't have to be happy and moving forward all the time. Sometimes we have to be okay with sitting still and letting ourselves heal. And some of us heal quicker than others. Mm-hmm. You need to give yourself the ability to take whatever time you need. Fuck the people who have a problem with you following protocols, or who want to go to the club and think you're crazy for staying home. Fuck them.
Yeah.
You don't feel comfortable, don't go.
I agree.
If you are feeling sad, find something that makes you happy and try to do it. It doesn't have to be anything big. Even if it is sitting there licking the cream out of an Oreo. You know, if you've been on a diet for years and years and you've not eaten a carb, eat a fucking carb. Bring yourself some joy. You know, like, do something that makes you, that allows you to take a moment to forget. Mm-hmm. Because those moments of forgetting are what charge your battery to when you're conscious and there to allow you to keep going. Nobody's superhuman. Nobody's a machine. If you need to cry, you need to cry. Mm-hmm. If you need to sleep for a week, you need to sleep. If you want to just be in your home. My husband hasn't really left the house in months. I do the grocery shopping. I go and do things. But I'm not harping on him. I'm encouraging him to push his boundaries a little bit, but to be comfortable. I don't want him to ever feel like he's being yanked up, because this is the ultimate thing. To be honest, I mean, now that I'm talking about it, the passion that I have right now is helping each other understand that we're in this together, and to have a little compassion for each other. We're all suffering.
Yeah.
We have not experienced this in our lives, where the entire world
is a trauma state right now.
And people don't realize that collective trauma is a real thing, and delayed reaction to the trauma can be a real thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I encourage any of those people who've still been working the whole time, there are two things I will tell you. One, be fucking grateful.
Yeah.
Because you have it.
Mm-hmm.
And two, be compassionate to those of us who don't.
Yeah.
Because, like, I sat there, I just had to, I mean, this, I know this is a little personal, but I had to call my bank because of some loans that we have had. We've paid for over years, and they're fine, and we've never had a problem. I had to call my bank and say, can I get a break? Can I just get a couple months to not pay that so I can focus on this and hopefully get back to work?
Yeah.
And maybe get ahead a little bit. And when I was speaking to the woman on the other end, she was asking me to fill out all this financial paperwork. And I was like, what part of I have been put out of work due to a pandemic don't you seem to get?
Yeah.
I have zero income since March 15th.
Mm-hmm.
I've been living off of savings. Our 20th anniversary Europe trip, we cashed it back in, and that's been what we've been living on.
Mm-hmm.
I said, what part of that don't you seem to get? Well, what about your unemployment? What about your da-da-da-da-da? What about the da-da-da-da? And I said, okay, you must really live in a perfect bubble. Well, but I understand what you're going through. Okay, no, you don't.
Mm-hmm.
You might be able to empathize, but you never lost a paycheck. You never lost your health insurance. You never had to worry about where your rent is coming from. You may have had to adjust how you work, but nothing was interrupted. So don't tell any of us who have been majorly affected by this that you understand, because you don't.
And there's a sense of normalcy that they also got to maintain in continuing.
Exactly. And it's like, this is the challenge for those people to really tap into their empathy.
Mm-hmm.
And to not tell us you sympathize. Don't sympathize with me, because you have to have experienced it. Mm-hmm. But you can empathize. You can say, I can only imagine what that would feel like. And treat each other. This is the point when we are going to figure out what we are as a country. Are we a society of humans that give a shit about each other, or are we just selfish? And I'd like to think we're the former.
It'll remain to be seen. This whole time, this episode's going to come out in mid-October. So I'm just going to keep saying it at the end of every one of my episodes. Make sure you're registered to vote, ladies and gentlemen. There is, I don't think, anything more important that's happening this year.
All of the folks out there that are listening, if you are not registered to vote, please do so. If you don't think your vote matters, it does.
It absolutely does.
If it feels scary or you feel intimidated by going to your poll, then mail it in.
Mm-hmm.
Or go with friends in your pod and walk by, because the Dalton chief just told his poll watchers to go out. That is voter intimidation. Go and ignore them as much as you can. Don't engage. You don't even need to go with signage, because the most impactful thing you can do is to walk in, vote, vote, vote.
Yeah.
Vote your vote, whether it be mailing it in or facing those demons and walking in there and doing it.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
You know, and I will say, if you can go to the grocery store, you can vote.
Yeah.
But I also understand with the intimidation, so I get it, you know, but do whatever you can do. This is not the time to give up. This is not the time to vote Green Party. This is not the time to vote independent. This is not the time.
Please don't do that.
Vote. I don't care if you like Uncle Joe or not. You despise the Dalton Chief. So at this point, if you think it's the lesser of two evils, pick the lesser of two evils. Yeah. He may not be perfect, but he's a hell of a lot better for our country. He's a hell of a lot more respected leader than we could ever, ever hope to get from the idiot in chief.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead and do our listeners a quick favor. Let them know what your social media is. How's the best way they can keep up with what you are doing?
At the Mama Tits, T-H-E-M-A-M-A-T-I-T-S. Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. My website is themamatits.com. You can also buy my merch on my website, themamatits.com. It's some of the most, it's actually the highest quality print on demand products I've ever found.
Nice.
They're not dirt cheap, but you are paying what you pay for, you get a value of. And I've had nothing but rave reviews of everybody. So get over there, support a drag queen. Take your time, wash your hands, be kind to one another. Just even the ones that you can't stand, be kind to one another and yourself. And as I always tell everybody, be yourself, be proud, and always shine like the star you are.
And then our final question for the podcast, it's interesting because you've probably already touched on it in the things that you've said, but what is the most recent thing that's happened to you that's made you purely happy? What is it that you're doing for yourself to find happiness?
To be honest, it's been taking the time for myself to turn it off.
Yes.
It's not disconnecting and ignoring it all. It's just, I'm going to designate today 5 hours. I'm not going to deal with it all. I'm going to go and be present 100% on the beach, in the jungle, in my backyard, you know, listening to music, whatever it is. But take some time to just center yourself.
Mm-hmm. What I've been doing to do that is...
And watch The Social Dilemma, because it'll make you turn off all the social media shit real quick.
You're the one who made me watch it, and I can just say it blew my mind. You know, it.
When you realize that you're the one being farmed, you're being farmed. We're not the problem. We are the ones being farmed.
Yeah,
that's the creepy part. It's and when you realize that the AI is smarter, and they admit that the AI is smarter than they are, and they can't keep up with the AI, that's really frightening.
Yeah. It truly is. Go watch The Social Dilemma.
Yeah, watch it. Turn off your notifications so that you only go in when you want to. And trust me, it'll cut your screen time down. It'll make your life easier. And go out and enjoy the rain or play with your dog or just lay in the fucking in the grass in the yard and spray a hose on you and pretend like you're dancing naked in the rain. Just take some time for you, babies. Every single one of the folks listening, you deserve to know that you are fucking worth it. So take the time.
Yep. Well, thank you so much for joining me on Eye to Eye today, Brian, aka Mama Tits.
Thank you, all of the wonderful listeners. I really appreciate you.
Now go outside. We'll be here and gayer when you get back.
Yes. And wash your hands.
This episode of Eye to Eye was edited by Dylan Newman and the theme song written and performed by Emily Easley. Make sure to rate and subscribe at Apple Podcasts or wherever you enjoy podcasts today.